Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane, Namaste Sarasatundeve, Gauramani Vacharane, Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskatya Desitarane. Oma Ganatvanandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshur Umilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutle Swayam Rupa Kadam Ayam Dadati Swapadantikam Pandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagarjatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Prajana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivasakam Zvitamscha Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dhinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishuvana Sudadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakapa Dhruvyascha Kripa Sindhuvyevacha Patidanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda Shadvaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 10. Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Text number 19. Vivaksho
Vivaksho
Vimuktaha
Vimuktaha
Bhumna
Bhumna
Vani
Vani
Vak
Vak
Vyaritam
Vyaritam
Tayo
Tayo
Jale
Sha
Etasya
Suchiram
Niroda Samajayata Vivakshur Mukato Bhumno Vanirvak Vyaritam Tayo Jale Chaitasya
Suchiram
Niroda Samajayata Vivakshura Mukato Bhumno Vanirvag Vyaritam Tayo Jale Chaitasya
Suchiram
Niroda Samajayata When there was a need to speak Vimukataha from the mouth Bhumna
of the Supreme
Vani
fire
or the controlling deity of fire Vak
vibration
Vyaritam
speeches
Tayo
by both
Jale,
in the water.
Sha,
however.
Etasya,
of all these.
Suchiram,
very, very long time.
Niroda,
suspension.
Samajayata,
did continue.
Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When the Supreme desired to speak, speeches were vibrated from the mouth. When the controlling deity of fire was generated from the controlling deity of fire was generated from the mouth. But when he was lying in the water, all these functions remained suspended. Purport. The peculiarity of the gradual development of the different senses
is simultaneously supported by their controlling deities. It is to be understood, therefore, that the activities of the sense organs are controlled by the will of the Supreme. The senses are, so to speak, offering a license for the conditioned souls who are able to use them properly under the control of the controlling deity deputed by the Supreme Lord. One who violates such controlling regulations has to be punished by degradation to a lower status of life. Consider, for example, the tongue and its controlling deity, Varuna. The tongue is meant for eating, and men, animals, and birds each have their different tastes because of different licenses. The tastes of human beings and that of the swine are not on the same level. The controlling deity, however, awards or certifies a particular type of body when the particular living entity develops a taste in terms of different modes of nature. If the human being develops taste without discrimination, as is a swine, then the controlling deity is certainly certified for the next term to award him the body of a swine. The swine accepts any kind of foodstuff, including stools, and a human being has developed such indiscriminate taste must be prepared for a degraded life in the next life. Such a life is also God's grace, because the conditioned soul desired a body like that for perfectly tasting a particular type of foodstuff. If a man gets the body of a swine, it must be considered the grace of the Lord, because the Lord awards the facility. After death, the next body is offered by superior control, not blindly. A human being, therefore, must be on his guard as to what sort of body he's going to have in the next life. An irresponsible life of indiscrimination is risky, and that is the declaration in all scriptures. Declaration in all scriptures. Vivakshura mukato bhumno vanirvag vyaritam tayo vile chaitasya sutiram niroda samajayata. When the Supreme desired to speak, speeches were vibrated from the mouth. The controlling deity of fire was generated from the mouth. But when he was lying in the water, all these functions remained suspended. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskatya De Satarna. As explained in the other verses, that these verses are analyzing our present situation. And here the idea that the living entity is different from his present body and he's under control. That this is being emphasized. Something called the law of karma. That the material world is not working indiscriminately. There are two classes of persons in the material world. Krishna says, Dvalimo purusho loke, shara chakshara evacha, shara sarvani bhutani kutasta shara uchite. One class is called shara and the other is akshara. One is fallible and the other is infallible. And the difference between the two is that one is aware of one's dependency upon Krishna and follows Krishna's directions, and the other class is imagining themselves to be independent and working, seemingly independent, but actually simply subservient to the three modes of material nature. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita is Buddha Yoga, the yoga of intelligence. Because a human being, he has intelligence unlike that of the lower species of life, an intelligence by which one can understand one's present situation and what to do. One time Srila Prabhupada came to Buffalo where I was, and there were a few devotees in the temple at that time. This was the beginning of 1969, and during one of his first classes, he asked the devotees present, "Do you want to become happy?" No one had asked such a a profound philosophical question before, so no one amongst the devotees knew the answer. So no one said anything. And Prabhupada looked very concerned. So he asked the same question again, do you want to be happy? So everyone, I guess the devotees there were sitting there trying to figure out what the answer probably should be. And no one answered. So the third time Prabhupada asked again, do you want to become happy? And then finally one devotee ventured forth a guess and said yes. And Prabhupada said, oh, very nice. So the goal of life is ananda buddhi vardana, padipanam pranamrita svaranam, sarvatma snapanam parangi jayate shri krishna sankirtan. We want a ocean. We want a bhakti rasamrita sindhu. An ocean which is amrita, which is nectarian, and which is eternal. But how to find that ocean? Everyone is trying to figure out where is that ocean. So this figuring it out means that everyone's trying to use their intelligence to understand where to get perpetual happiness. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita is called Buddha Yoga, and the first instruction Krishna gives about Buddha Yoga in Bhagavad Gita, or the use of intelligence, is Deno Sminita Dehe Kamaram Yovanam Jara Yata Dahantara Praptir Diryas Tatra Namuyati. That is, everyone's body is changing. That should be obvious. Everyone can accept that. But what's a little bit more subtle is that the person within the body is not changing. Although we all have direct experience of that. But due to Maya, our intelligence is taken away. Therefore, either we don't think about the fact that I'm not changing, or we can't really consider it very profoundly, the fact that I'm different from this body. Therefore, even so-called learned scholars, Prabhupada used to point out, the head of the Indology department in Moscow, he could not accept the fact that he was different from his body. The simple fact that our body changes, most people have the intelligence to figure that out, but they don't have the intelligence to figure out that they're not changing. But one who has that intelligence, that's the beginning of spiritual understanding. Now, there may be other types of use of intelligence. People are building skyscrapers, computers, they're building microscopes, they're doing so many different types of medical science where they can create living entities in test tubes, so to speak. But they don't have the intelligence to understand that they're not their body. Therefore, according to Bhagavad Gita at least, according to Krishna, such persons are considered to be mudhas, asses. Prahlad Maharaj says, vimudha, they're super asses, and Krishna just, as a matter of diplomacy, says they're just plain asses. Yasyasti bhakti, yasyatma buddhi kunapetri taduke, sudhikala tradishu bhoma idudi, atirta buddhe, salena karichish ganeshvabhageshus eva gokara. Well, either they're asses or they're cows. But it is not proper intelligence, and therefore a person who's thoughtful, they have to consider, if I'm not this body, and everyone else is not their body, not only the human beings, because it is a science. Everyone's body, whether plant or bacteria or demigod or human being, everyone has a body that's changing, and the life force within the body is always the same. Therefore, why is it that there are so many living entities and so many species of life, and that they're now trapped within the material body? What is actually the cause behind it? So the impersonalists, they have some philosophy which explains some kind of lila between the Brahman manifesting itself in so many varieties of species of life and torturing itself. The Brahman was too happy, peaceful. It decided, let's have a change. Let me go and torture myself for a while. That way I can get some variety. So this is the impersonalist conception. But does it really explain things clearly? According to Narada Muni, In Srimad Bhagavatam, he says, Naishkaryam apya bhava varjitam Yashobhite jnanam alam niranjanam Kutakmana shasvat abhadram ishvare Echarpitam karma yet apya varj karna. So he says that self-realization, if it's devoid of knowledge of the infallible personality of Godhead, doesn't look very nice. What to speak of fruitive activities, which from the very beginning are naturally painful, if they're not utilized in the service of Lord Krishna. In other words, any somewhat intelligent person can understand that there's a difference between myself and the body. Now, how we become trapped in different bodies, how are we going to find out how we become trapped? Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Mamayavangso jivaloke jivabhutakshanatana. That the living entities are all eternal. And they're angsa, they're particles of me. But due to illusion, they're karshiti, they're struggling very hard for the six senses which include the mind. Mamayavangso jivaloke jivabhutakshanatana. Manakshastran indriyani prakritistani karshiti. Therefore, we're struggling in this material world. And what are we struggling for? Generally, everyone's struggling to maintain this body. So in the next verse, Krishna uses the word conception. Shariram yadavapnoti yatschapyukramatishraha grihivaitani samyati vayor ganda ivashaya. So he says, just like air is carrying aroma. So air is pure by nature, but sometimes it carries aromas. Sometimes air, when it passes through a rose garden, it smells very sweet like a rose. And sometimes when it passes by garbage, it smells exactly like garbage. But air doesn't become garbage, nor does it become a rose. But it carries that particular ganda, or that particular scent. So shariram, the body, the living entity, yad shariram avapnoti. So avapnoti means to obtain. And ukramatishvaraha, sometimes it gives up, leaves the body. So what kind of body it has, why it gets one body and then gives it up and takes another, that is a mystery. Even for one who understands that we're not this body, why do I get this body? And what will be my next body? This an intelligent person has to ask. Shrotram chakshu sparshanam cha, rasanam granam eva cha, adishtayam anakshanyam vishayan upasevate. And when we get a body, whether it be that of a dog body, or a cat body, or a demigod body, human body, a mouse body, whatever body we get, we identify ourselves with that body. In other words, when we're in illusion, we're perfectly in illusion. That the false ego imprisons a living entity in this creation. And once we're under the spell of the false ego, then we're an illusion. Whatever body we have, we identify with. And then the mind impels us to act in so many different ways. If one is in jail, it doesn't matter if one is in first-class prison cell, or second-class prison cell, or third-class prison cell. One is in jail, in prison. And then the mind pushes us. So if the mind is in the mode of goodness, we're pushed towards the mode of goodness. If the mind is in the mode of passion, we're pushed towards the mode of passion. If the mind is in the mode of ignorance, we're pushed towards the mode of ignorance. And then we get a suitable body to accommodate what the results of our being pushed in a certain direction are. Of course, this sounds quite mechanical. That, all right, well, why am I responsible? That I'm not responsible, I'm being pushed. The person who's pushing me, he's responsible. I was just sitting there innocently in the mode of goodness, and someone came along and pushed me into the mode of passion. So why don't you arrest that person who's pushing everyone, all the living entities, pushing them in different species of life. Even in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna boldly declares, Asri etanaham dvishata kuran, samsarashi naradama, shipram yajastram ashubam, Asri Shweva Yonishu. That those who are mischievous and envious, who are lowest among men, I perpetually cast them into lower species of life. So what kind of God is this? These people are having enough problems. They're envious and mischievous. They're the lowest of people. And what does Krishna does is he raises them up and help them become elevated. No, he pushes them further down into this lower species of life. The person's down, and what does God do? He pushes them further down. So is this the type of God we want to worship? No wonder everyone's so rebellious. I mean, Krishna says it himself. I'm just repeating what he says. Then he says, Asrim yonim apana mura janmani janmani mama prap yaiva kondiya tato yantyanamam gitim. And when they attain such lower species of life, these asuras, they can never approach me. And thus they sink down to the most abominable level of existence. So Krishna says, only I can help them, but when I push them down, they're in such a position, they can't get up. They can never get help from it. So this sounds quite disturbing. Here we are, we're helpless living entities being pushed around by the modes of nature, and the only person who can help us, as soon as we get captured by a mode, he pushes us further down in such a way we can never get his help. So that's part of the story, but of course it's not the whole story. Krishna says, Trividam narakasyedam, dwaram nashitam atmanaha, kama krodha tata lobas, tasmat etam trayam tyajet. That there are three gates leading to this hell, lust, anger, and greed, so every sane person should give them up because they lead to the degradation of the soul. Apparently the soul, she has choice. Actually, it's probably she because soul is actually prakriti, apara prakriti, or para prakriti. That the soul, he or she has a choice. The soul can either take shelter of Krishna or take shelter of lust, anger, and greed. That as soon as the soul makes a choice, of course, lust, anger, and greed, just like there is ice cream, comes in 32 flavors and some. But these flavors come in 8,400,000 species of life. If you want variety, if you're not satisfied with 32 flavors of ice cream, there are 8,400,000 different flavors you can taste. And each body has a particular taste. Here it mentions, Prabhupada points out the distinction between the hog who eats stool and the human being who is inferred here is supposed to be eating prasadam. Unfortunately, Prabhupada says in human form of life, people don't understand that there is such a thing as karma. And as soon as they do something, they get a reaction. It may not be immediate. But why don't they understand? This is due to avidya. So avidya comes in different flavors also. It manifests itself in different varieties. Avidya means ignorance. Of course, if you walk up to someone in the street and tell them, my dear sir, please take this book because you're in ignorance, people will think that this person certainly must be in ignorance. They don't see God when they walk up to him. They don't understand who... This person obviously doesn't know me very well. He doesn't know how much I have in the bank. Doesn't know how many people I'm supporting. Doesn't know anything about me. Doesn't know how I'm displaying my transcendental knowledge above everyone else. So, of course, most people don't think they're in ignorance. Most people think they're enlightened. After all, they've watched all the television programs, all the news programs. They know exactly what's going on, practically everywhere on this planet. And they've already figured out that there's nothing going on anywhere else. Therefore, they actually know everything, practically speaking, that's worth knowing. So, of course, the devotee has to go with a straw between his teeth up to people on the street and say, my dear sir, I've noticed your effulgence. Out of all the people passing by, I saw that you were effulgent. So therefore I decided to fall at your feet, and I'm thinking how great you are, O magnanimous great one, O best of all people. I'm taking shelter of you, falling at your feet and flattering you a million times. So then the person thinks, oh, here finally I met someone who has some intelligence, whose intelligence has not been stolen by illusion. And they said, yes, that is true. I am the most magnanimous. I am the most generous. I am the most intelligent. I am the most elevated. So to show you, to prove it to you, to demonstrate in a practical way, I'm asking you, my dear sir, or best of my servants, what would you like? So please take this book and give a donation. And send, in essence, the person will take the book, give a donation, go home and read, my dear sir, you are fool number one. You're the lowest among people. Your destination is very bleak. What is this book? Just like Mother Nikunda Vasini, she has experience. She distributed one of our books on the street. I think in one of the books, what was the name of that book?
Silk Thread.
Many of the silk threads can be distributed. And I don't know if they have the picture, but in some of our books they have a picture of a nice lady, and she has claws. And she looks like a wolf. And the little children look like jackals. Is that what she upset this lady? It describes how this person is in household life, and it's like a jungle. The material world is like a jungle where the person, his energy is being sucked or chewed or dissipated or by the family members. Is that what upset her? Yes. So she thought, what is this? What kind of society is this? What are these people preaching? So she called up Mother Nikunda Vasini and said, you seem to be such a nice person. How could such a nice person like you distribute a book like this? So of course the idea is that if she read a little further, this particular lady, she would have found out that actually we're not this body. And that anyone, man or woman, or child, or even animal, who's not being helped to be progressed in self-realization, is becoming cheated by the illusory energy. So these books and our philosophy says that actually anyone in the material world is a criminal. People don't like to hear that. They like to think about how honest they are. They pay most of their taxes, unlike everyone else who doesn't. They cross when it's red, when there's a traffic light. They don't cross and only when it's green. So they're a good person. To find out that inherently they're a criminal, this goes against people's understanding. To understand that there's a God, and not only he owns he owns everything. He owns the whole universe. Not only he owns his planet, but he owns this one too. Not only owns the planet, but he also owns my house. That is not my house. Not only that, he owns my body. I can't use my body independently. Not only owns the body, but he owns me. This is too much. I'm a puppet. Then they start thinking images of the monkey on a stick. That's how people perceive us. Yes, you're a monkey on the stick. Just like they have an organ grinder, he's grinding the organ, and the monkey has to go out with a little cup and everyone throws a few coins, and then he has to bring it back to the master, and the master takes all the coins. And the poor monkey, he may get a banana, he may not get a banana, but he's a monkey on the stick. Therefore, when people think of God owning everything, even the self, then where is my independence? That I'm simply controlled, I can't do anything. As soon as I do something wrong, oh, he smacks me again. So this type of conception people don't like. They want to think themselves free. We're free to do whatever we like. We're free to enjoy our senses. We're free to exploit people. We're free to be good people. We're free to be bad people. Whatever you want to be, just be. This whole country is with this philosophy. Some of them are right next door, I think. Where people actually think, everyone can do whatever they want, it's okay. And then to introduce this idea of the law of karma, that everyone is under the law, then people become very disturbed, that there's law and we have to follow it, that why can't we progress so that there'll be a day when we don't have to follow the law anymore. They say, all right, we have some laws now, but if we educate people enough, then we don't have to follow the laws, and everyone can be free to gratify their senses as they like, whenever they like. But there is a law of karma. Otherwise, why do we have this body? It wasn't by accident. Why are there trees? Why are there grasshoppers? Why are there planets? Why all these things? So this takes a little thoughtfulness, that if we think by accident I got this body, or by accident I'll get my next body, by accident everything's going on, if we have this accident theory, then of course we're not going to inquire very deeply into the matter. We'll think it's just an act, just by chance. But according to Bhagavad Gita, nothing's by chance. Even on the street, two cars hit each other, they collide, there's a big accident, and the police come, someone says, well, what happened? And someone says, it was an accident. So the police said, oh, it's an accident, there's no sense of finding out what happened, it's just an accident. No, an accident, even an accident must be caused by some people, under some circumstances, for some reason. Even people conclude it's all an accident, there must be something behind the accident. Accidents don't happen by accident. If planets are moving their orbits, it's because there must be some intelligent person behind it. Gama visha chabudani daryam aham ojasa yadaditi katam tejo jagat pasayate kilam it's chandamasi yat chagno tat tejo virimamakam. The splendor of the sun, Krishna says, it comes from me. So, with all our intelligence, who can create such a wonderful creation as the sun, which gives unlimited heat and light, since time immemorial, never increasing or decreasing its energy, giving us exactly what we need to maintain ourselves on this, in this planet. With all our so-called intelligence, who can create such a wonderful instrument for our benefit? Such a wonderful creation. Therefore, with a little intelligence observing the creation, we have to conclude that just as we, with our intelligence, are able to make little things like electric light bulbs, so it requires a greater amount of intelligence to make a bigger light bulb the size of the sun. Therefore, it has to be understood that there is, just as we're controlling the electric powerhouse, so there are bigger persons who are controlling bigger powerhouses. And Brahma says, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamahang Bhajami, it's Chaksha Esha Savita Sakala Grahanam, Rajas Samasta Suramurtiya Sheshateja, Yes, Yagaya Brahmati Samrita Kala Chakra, Govindam Adi Purushang Tamahang Bhajami. So he at least gives the credit to Govinda. Brahma, who's according to, he says himself, he's the secondary creator, but he gives the credit to the first creator, Govinda. And Govinda says in Bhagavad Gita that Savasicham Ridhi Sanivishto Matak Smritira Jnanam Aponam Cha. That I am in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So this Govinda is not some person far, far away that we can have no contact with. He's right there in our heart. And we can get from him remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. And at least in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains what will give us knowledge, what will give us remembrance, and what will give us forgetfulness. How to increase our knowledge, how to increase our forgetfulness. Now we may not want to read Bhagavad Gita. We may want to hear someone else. We may not like Krishna and what he says. So that everyone has their choice. And then we have to see practically what happens to such persons. According to our philosophy, if you don't like Krishna, Krishna says, then you're Mogaisha Moga Karmano Moga Jnana Vichetasaha Rakshasim Asvim Chaiva Prapati Moanim Shritaha. That such persons, their cultivation of knowledge, their fruit of activities, their Mogaisha Moga Karmano Moga Jnana Vichetasaha, and their hopes of liberation, they're all futile. In other words, if we don't take shelter of Krishna, then mrityu samsara, then we have to come back to birth and death. Now, for some people, they may think that's quite nice, that we can come back and get another chance to become God. But according to God, it doesn't matter how many times we've tried to become God, we've never become God, and in the future, it doesn't matter how many times we're going to try to become God in the future, we're still not going to become God. No matter how much we imagine ourselves to be God, it's never going to work. And no matter how elevated one becomes in the material world, still we're not going to actually be the controller, because Krishna is going to be with us, and he's going to sense our desires, just like one can smell the flavor of a flower by being next to it. And under his direction, the material nature is going to arrange itself to fulfill our desires. So we can desire, either desire to become a demigod, desire to become a bird or a bug or an insect, and Krishna will fulfill all his desires, whatever we want. Or we can desire to go back to the spiritual world and take up our natural position as being Krishna's servant. Ekala Ishvara Krishna. That there's only one controller, and Ara Sava Britya. And everyone else is Britya, his servant. Yari Yache Nachaya Se Taiche Kare Nritya. As Krishna wants everyone to dance, so everyone is dancing. But that factor of free will is there. Whatever, however we want to dance, Krishna will arrange it, so we dance that way. So here in the material world especially, the living entity is desiring, and Krishna arranges everything for him, according to his desire. So as we desire, Krishna arranges, and we dance. So the Super Soul, Krishna, he's neutral, but it's our desire which is causing us to go from one body to another. And it's our desire that can bring us back to the spiritual world. But that desire has to be desiring Krishna. There is no question of actual liberation. There's no question of actually making progress in a real way in any sphere in this existence without dovetailing our desires with the desire of Krishna. So that's the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. If we want to enjoy the material world, then Krishna will give us all facility to enjoy the material world and 8,400,000 species of life. And if we want to enjoy in the spiritual world, if we want to enjoy in our original position, we can do that also. It simply remains with us to understand by hearing. In other words, Maharaja Shabdev says, Nunam pramata kurute vikarma, yet indriya pritya aprinoti, nesara manye yat atmanoyam, asana pikleshita ashadeha. That the living entity, he's pramata, he's become crazy, because he's identifying himself or herself with someone that they're not. And it's all due to this idea that by gratifying my senses, I'll become happy. And if I don't gratify my senses, I'll become unhappy. So this is all the realm of klesha or avidya. Avidya leads to false ego, which means leads to attachment to try to enjoy sense gratification, and dvesha, which means the aversion to anything that will impede my sense gratification. And then abhiniveshita. Abhiniveshita means absorption in the material world, or the conception of being part of the material energy. And this leads, as I said before, a conception leads us from one body to the next. So as long as we remain in ignorance, then we'll think that enjoyment of the senses is happiness, and the absence of enjoyment of the senses is misery. And we'll try to make arrangements in so many different ways for our sense gratification in the material world. And we'll simply be subjected to one body after another. Therefore, paravas tavara bodha jato, yavan jignasita atma tatvam, yavan kriyat tavati dhammano vai, karmatmakam yena sharira bhandaha. So as long as one is in this material world and doesn't inquire about the nature of the self, about the nature of the super self, then one is said to be defeated by the mode of ignorance. Avidya. So just as we went over in the Nectar of Devotion, avidya leads to bija. Bija means the seed, the desire. Let me enjoy raga and dvesha. And raga and dvesha, the desire to enjoy the material world and to avoid suffering, leads to papam, sinful activities. As we can see in this material world, they're trying to cultivate more and more sinful activity, more and more desire to enjoy the material nature. All these advertisements are simply to stimulate our desire. And then, when the desire is there, naturally the activities, sinful activity, papam, will be there to gratify the senses, and that leads to aparabdha karma. Within our heart, there is some reaction, karma, aparabdha karma, and that manifests immediately as parabdha karma. Parabdha karma means we get a reaction. You eat too much, someone eats too much, there's reaction. One feels some pain in the stomach. That's the reaction. It's called parabdha karma. And not only is parabdha karma from aparabdha karma, but there is kutam. There's an inclination, subtle inclination, to do the same activity again, which leads to bija, more of material desire. So Prabhupada gives the example of illicit sex. One performs illicit sex. There's a reaction. The lady may become pregnant or whatever. There's some kind of reaction. And then, or there's venereal disease, actually. Prabhupada uses this example. One has illicit sex, one acquires venereal disease. That's called parabdha karma. And then there is a tendency to perform more illicit sex. It is not that now I've had illicit sex, now I'm completely satisfied, no more illicit sex. No, there'll be more of a tendency to perform more illicit sex, and therefore the desire is there again. Even when it's cured of the venereal disease by some kind of prayaschitta or atonement or purification, but because the desire is there, therefore again one will perform illicit sex, and again there'll be venereal disease, and again the desire will increase even more. So, from avidya, one circles around, simply, or circles down and down and down into the lower species of life. So the solution is to get rid of the avidya. So how to get rid of the avidya? Ignorance? Jignasita. One has to inquire about the absolute truth. One has to become inquisitive. Inquisitive means not blind following absurd inquiries, prabhus that are condemned. So blind following, the lack of inquisitiveness, I'm just a monkey on a stick, whatever they tell me I do, that's not appreciated. And absurd inquiries. Let me look at these books and inquire in such a way as to try and figure out what's wrong with them. There must be some contradiction. There must be something that, or the modern, one of the modern things in ISKCON that I observed, these books are so confusing that no one can understand. Or these books may be perfect, but since all of us are imperfect, none of us can understand what they mean. Therefore, no one knows how to apply them in any practical way. Therefore, they're as good as useless for all of us. So there may be different varieties of the same thing, absurd inquiries of blind following. But our philosophy is one has to get a clear understanding through submission, service, and inquiries. So the art of submission, the art of becoming inquisitive, the art of service, this is the art of Krishna consciousness. Who to be submissive to and how to be submissive, how to inquire and what to inquire about, what kind of service to render and how to do it in Krishna consciousness or without Krishna consciousness. There's a whole science behind that so that eventually we get a clear understanding. Without a clear understanding, without understanding things clearly, without becoming free from avidya, then paravas tavata bodha jato. We're defeated by ignorance. No matter how we think we're making progress, andaya tandera upigiyamana ste pisha tantra urudami bada. It's simply the blind leading the blind. Therefore, a clear understanding has to be there. And evamana karma visham prayukte avidya man kupadiyamane Pritirna yavan maivasa deve namuchite deha yogena yadva
or tadva.
That as long as one does not take up the devotional service of Krishna, as long as one is not understanding one's relation with Krishna and developing love for Vasudeva, that long one will be under the spell of ignorance and one will have to take one body after another. So vidya means that we are Krishna's servants and that Krishna is the master. And the more one expands that, the more one can see and understand how to serve Krishna and all different varieties of circumstances, how to understand what Krishna's desire is. This is called vidya. And without that vidya, without that knowledge, without hearing from the realized devotees means Krishna, Arjuna, Srimad Bhagavatam, and those who have experience in repeating from their experience, how to become free from this false conception of thinking ourselves to be something or someone other than Krishna's servant, and how to understand what the super soul wants us to do. We may accept that we're Krishna's servants, and then the next question is, what is, as Krishna's servant, what kind of service he wants me to do? Ya bhajana kriya anartha nivritti syat tato nishta ruchi stata tata sakti stato bhavas tata prema tujuchati sadakanamayam prema pradurbhave bhavat krama. One has to develop a little liking for this process of devotional service. One has to associate with the devotees, try to understand things in a practical way, and then practically perform bhajana kriya. That we have to follow vaidhi sana bhakti, both in the beginning stage and the perfectional stage. One has to seek out one's relation with Krishna, but as long as one remains in conditioned life or in this mature world, one has to act as a neophyte and follow the process of vaidhi sana bhakti. And it's by hearing about Krishna, hearing this philosophy, and performing the activities in devotional service so that we become capable of hearing. It is not such an easy matter to hear. Maya, she's always trying to defeat us. Yogas chalati manasa. And the way she defeats us is that we can't hear with attention. That's why we're not in the spiritual world, because we can't hear with attention. And no one can hear it with attention unless no one can realize Krishna unless one's mind is completely controlled. And no one's mind can be controlled unless one's senses are controlled. And when no one's senses can be controlled unless they're completely engaged in Krishna's service. So the secret of hearing with rapt attention from the very beginning, Prabhupada said, of course if you hear with rapt attention from the very beginning, then you can see Krishna on every page of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But in order to help us hear with rapt attention, we have to engage our senses in Krishna's service. Then we'll be able to hear with attention, we'll be able to fix our mind upon Krishna's transcendental pastimes, and we'll be able to therefore realize Krishna on every page in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So then the question is how to engage our senses in Krishna's service. So it says, according to the Nectar of Devotion, one has to engage oneself under the direction of the spiritual master. So that's a whole topic in itself. Who is the spiritual master? And because it says that from the without initiation by the bona fide spiritual master, the actual connection with Krishna consciousness is not achieved. So that's probably has been the subject of debate for the last, since Prabhupada left. And probably, as far as I can see, it hasn't been completely resolved, except that most of the devotees, they believe that Prabhupada, at least, was the bona fide spiritual master, and that we should all try to understand his instructions. So his instructions weren't something mysterious that you have to, you know, you take up one of the Srimad Bhagavatams, and you have a secret pencil, and you erase some of the words, and then the real meaning is displayed. Sometimes you have these little cards and you have to scratch it and then you find out how much money you win. So the actual meaning of the Bhagavatam has to be scratched away from the real words And then finally the meeting is revealed. That actually you're God and you should be free to do whatever you want or whatever. No, the meaning is very, Prabhupada made it very clear. He tried to say the same things over and over again. At least everyone can agree, things like Prabhupada said that we're not this body and that Krishna is God and that we should, and that Krishna wants every one of us, including ourselves, to go back to the spiritual world. So if these things are the subject, well, Prabhupada didn't really say that and Krishna didn't really mean that. Krishna really wants us all to stay here in the material world because otherwise, you know, then who's going to take care of the material world if we're not here? Someone has to, you know, take care of the place. No, I think all of us can agree. Prabhupada said that we're Krishna's servants, we're spiritual souls, Krishna's God, and we're supposed to help other people become Krishna conscious also. Krishna is the enjoyer, Krishna is the controller, and he's the friend. And we should serve Krishna, utilize whatever we have to inform Krishna about, inform other living entities, other human beings especially, about these basic facts. So this is called devotional service. And this movement has been organized by Prabhupada around that, to hear about Krishna regularly, hear the philosophy, become realize the fact that we're Krishna's servants, Yari Deka Tari Kaha Krishna Upadesh, Amara Agaya Guru Hana Tar Adesh. Now study these books. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Korma, the Brahmin Korma, that you should study these books, become realized in Krishna consciousness, Krishna Upadesh, and then tell other people about it. That's called hearing and chanting, and then the result will be remembrance. Then we'll get realization that we're Krishna's servants. So we just hear about Krishna, we just have these classes, everyone says, yes, I'm Krishna's servant, and then we walk out the door and we think, what, you know, what's for breakfast anyhow? You know, what am I, how can I enjoy? How, you know? No, we hear that we're Krishna's servants, Krishna wants us to preach Krishna consciousness, then if we do that, that's called kirtan, repeating it. And through Shravanam, Kirtanam, then there will be Vishnu Smarana. If one, someone thinks, I'm going to jump from Shravanam all the way up to Smaranam, they can try and do that. But we can see that it's very difficult. Because as soon as one stops Kirtan, as soon as one stops the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that even organizations where people are much more cultured than we are, Prabhupada gives the example of the Gaudiya Math, because they stop Kirtan. Because they didn't hear it properly. They stopped trying to hear. They thought they had already understood. Therefore, they stopped trying to hear from their spiritual master. And because they stopped kirtan, therefore, although they imagined themselves to be realized, but actually they became, many of them became sahajis. They took everything cheaply. So we have to keep on hearing from Srila Prabhupada and from those who have understood Prabhupada. And then we have to follow to the best of our ability. And then Krishna says the Dami Buddha Yogam Tam. He gives the knowledge. He, Tesham Eva Nukam Haratam, Ahama Gyana Jam Tamaha, Nasham Yam Yatma Bhavishto, Gyana Dipena Bhashvataha. If we're actually pleasing Krishna, then he'll give us intelligence. And he'll destroy our ignorance. And the result is, should be, that we see our sinful proclivities, our sinful desires are diminishing. That we're seeing our sinful activities are diminishing. That the sinful reactions are diminishing. And therefore we become more peaceful. Peaceful to do what? To understand the science of Krishna with more rapt attention. To make further progress so that eventually we enter into the spiritual kingdom. Bhakti Parayashanu Vyaktir Anyatra Trika Ekakala Praparamanasya Tashnatasus Tushti Pushti Shudapaya Nugasam. Now that has to be tested. Am I becoming more attached to Krishna and thus attached to Maya? Am I actually understanding how everyone and everything is related to Krishna? Am I actually becoming satisfied in that way? That's the test of actually devotional service, of freedom from avidya and enlightenment in Krishna consciousness. So that we have to test. That would be the practical glory for Prabhupada. If we want to glorify Srila Prabhupada, it's not that he knew the scriptures. There are many of his godbrothers who are great, great scholars in Sanskrit and all kinds of different philosophies. It is not that Prabhupada is simply the authority. Prabhupada is the authority, especially because he was able to create a worldwide movement where people all over the world in all different nationalities and religions, they took up Krishna consciousness. Not because Krishna is a Hindu god and they become Hindus, but because Krishna is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-attractive person. And Prabhupada was able to practically demonstrate it, pralena parichayate, in a practical way. So Prabhupada had processed, it worked when he was here, and it will work when he's seemingly not here, because he's here according to his instructions. So those who are understanding, trying to understand and follow his instructions, then they'll should experience those three things. And that's what keeps the Krishna consciousness movement going. That the devotees are experiencing becoming free from everything that draws their mind away from Krishna. They're becoming more and more realized how everything and everyone is related to Krishna. And they're experiencing more and more transcendental happiness, more and more transcendental love in relation to Krishna. So that's what keeps our movement going. And if we hear from the right authorities, try and practice the best of our ability, then we'll experience those things ourselves. Or else the alternative is here. One can taste anything in the material world, except there's so many varieties we can taste. And probably gives a very graphic example in the verse. We can taste stool. And many people are heading that way. They're willing to taste anything. So why not stool? So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any comments? All right.
Yeah, one question. It is said by Mr. William Vogel, seeing you follow through as you are most magnanimous and this fire currently displays magnanimity. Charity goes on with the book and then finds that at least for number one. So, but that person may feel cheated or then he'll be less inclined to read the book.
Well, straightforward, because Krishna himself in Bhagavad Gita is not very straightforward. Krishna, he glorifies the karmis, he glorifies the yogis, he glorifies the jnani, he glorifies everyone in Bhagavad Gita. But then at the end he says, they're all fools, you should just give it all up. So you have to get to the end before you get the punchline in Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna is actually quite indirect. So similarly, we don't have to be completely direct when we're trying to preach Krishna consciousness, in the sense that we have to tell people as much as they can understand. Just like I remember one time one devotee told one lady, when I was distributing books with them, they said, oh, my dear lady, you seem very intelligent. She said, oh, you're just flattering me. So, but I'll give you a donation anyhow. So whatever works, Palena Parachita, because actually everyone's being cheated by the illusory energy in the material world. So we have to probably give the example of a child. If you tell the child, my dear child, here, take this medicine, it's really bitter, you're really going to suffer. Then the child will never take the medicine. You say, my dear child, take the medicine and then I'll give you sweetmeat. Then the child says, all right, I'll take the medicine. But then the parent may not give the sweetening.
Yeah, I agree. No problem with some flattery.
Prabodhananda Saraswati.
Of the children. So flat phrase, Prabhupada does say flat phrase. Mm. Use or as a fact. You cannot know them. Then when that person, when he finds reads the book, and then of course everything doesn't say anything. Not everything is
not directly.
You are a fool.
It says Arjuna's a fool. Krishna tells Arjuna from the beginning, "You're a fool, number one." So we think by the time we get to the end of the Bhagavad Gita, of course, in the introduction, Prabhupada says we should understand things from the relationship of Arjuna. But most people, if they're intelligent enough to understand that, there's two classes of people who will be intelligent enough: those who have actually probably performed devotional service, who are very pious, they'll understand that actually I'm an illusion. And those persons are demons who don't like this at all. The fact that knowledge is being exposed and therefore people won't be able to be controlled, they'll become angry. And most people, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he says, most people read this literature and they won't understand anything what's going on. They won't have a clue what's going on, especially the parts that he's dealing with in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So he says, but this is not right. You know, I'm writing this literature. But then he says, well, there's no problem writing this literature because those people are like asses and dogs. They'll never understand it anyhow. Only the people who are enlightened will understand it. So there's a natural checks and balances, you could say. There's a natural protective device within this literature that Krishna will only give people the intelligence that they deserve when they hear it. Because after all, if they're sincerely trying to understand things properly, then Krishna will enlighten them. And if they're sincerely trying to not understand things properly, Krishna will keep them in ignorance, no matter what they hear and read. They'll interpret it in their own way. I met one girl, she said, I like your books, because Krishna is my worshipful deity. So I said, oh, really? She said, yes, I have a deity of Krishna, I worship him. And then she told me, she said, oh, I think your books are very nice. And then she said, that actually, you know, I'm actually Krishna. And that someday I'll realize that I'm Krishna. So therefore your books are very nice. Because after all she was thinking that they're very nice because they're glorifying me. Everyone should find out about me. So the books have a natural protective device because, you know, Krishna, they are Krishna and Krishna is in our heart. And he lets us understand the books according to what our real purpose and sincerity is. Books
the
out.
Book out.
I mean, you know, just say anything.
Chain
your
mind. Only is to get the book out.
Prabhupada said that. He said, if you can catch the big fish without being wet, that's very good. So some of the tactics Prabhupada didn't disapprove of, he approved of them. But he said only if you're very expert. But not that afterwards they take the book and they become disappointed. We should be known, that the society should be known as a society of thoroughly honest people. So the example the Prabhupada used of being a little not so straightforward is like some landlady when you enter into a building, she says, do you have permission to be here? And so the devotee says, yes. So Krishna has given us permission, otherwise how are we there? So it's on a higher philosophical level. We say, yes, we got permission. So that type of thing. But not that you walk up to someone and says, oh, this is a book. What is the book about? And you ask the person, well, what are you into? He said, well, I was going to the store because I have an examination about electronic engineering. What? And, you know, so you go, wow, that's perfect. This book is all about electronic engineering. So this is what, you know, if you read this book, you'll definitely get a high mark in your test. Oh, yeah, really? Okay, I'll buy the book. That's all the money I have. And then they go home, you know, Dharma Chaitra, Kuru Chaitra, electronic engineering. So that person will obviously become a little disappointed. So that's not very good. But something that, you know, if you say something, you know, we're passing out these books to all the intelligent people, and you seem quite intelligent, so I'm sure you'll appreciate the book. So they go home and they read the book, then they certainly won't be disappointed.
Yes.
I have a comment to make about your comment. When she was distributing a book with that picture of the wife being like the tigress and the children like the jackal, I am also disturbed a little bit. Philosophically, I understand, you know, that material attachment, family life sucks you. But in reality, you can see that the woman, she's also, she's got the tiger. The man, she's got to work, raise the kids, have a job, take care of the house, and everything. And she's erratic sex by the husband, sucks her energy. So I understand why the woman can be disturbed, because they present only one aspect of the entanglement. The poor man being victimized by the woman, but the woman is also victimized by the man.
Yeah.
And especially in this world. And I can understand, it's not fair. To put that picture, there should be the other picture. So we have the complete picture.
Yeah, of course.
The reality.
That was obviously not the best picture to put into a book. You really want to tell it. It's called, my point was not to defend the picture.
No, but my point is, I've always been disturbed by this picture.
Well, you and I guess many other people are disturbed by it. But somehow or not, I hope they're not printing up more soap threads like with that picture. Did that picture have, was it the description or the picture? By the description.
It was the Yamadutas dragging Ajamil to hell because of his sexual activities.
Was that it? I thought it was...
It's the second chance, actually. In English, the book is called Second Chance.
Oh. Well, we had the same problem in America when we had this... I forget what it was. They had a picture of... We saw that picture of the jackal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that we were distributing that book, and some people... But I guess in this case, it was the Ajamil dragging someone to hell. And, you know, obviously... You know, if you're going to preach to the non-devotees who are going to look at something and think, wow, what is this? That it's better to carefully choose the pictures. So it's more appropriate to people's ability to understand what we're doing. Because in the Bhagavatam, you know, whether, as you said, there's different perspectives. That in one side it says, in the third canto, Kapila Deva is saying that how the man is entrapped by the wife and her caresses and in the solitary embrace and by her sweet talk and by the chirping of the children. The next part it says the woman is also, by the sound of the hunter, she's like a deer being captivated by the sound of the hunter. Just like she's captivated by the husband who gives her children and support. And so many different things, and she becomes a victim of Maya in that way. So there's two sides to it. Yes.
I remember His Holiness Vidyananda Goswami giving a comment on it. He said, okay, if you sing Bhagavatam pulls women down, he says, you see how the Bhagavatam smashes the men, horse, dogs, camels, and asses constantly. In that sense, he said that the men are getting on worse than the women in the Bhagavatam.
The baby's coming, stressing more hard. That's the end of it.
Well, actually, if we Prabhupada once told Vishakha Mataji, he said, if you think you're a woman, then you're less intelligent. But as soon as you think you're a spiritual soul, a servant of Krishna, then in one letter he wrote to one lady, to one Mataji, he said, I see that in our society, the ladies are more intelligent than men now. So that intelligence is based upon spiritual understanding. More intelligent, less intelligent, according to the Bhagavatam, is not simply a conception of how you're able to lord it over the material nature. It's an understanding of the fact that we're Krishna's servant and how much we actually want to dedicate our energies to Krishna's service. So as soon as man or woman, because we're not men and women, we're all women. Prabhupada said, for the man, the woman's a woman, and for a woman, the man's the woman. So as soon as we understand that we're all women in relation to Krishna and become subservient to Krishna, then we have proper intelligence. And as soon as we think other than that, then we lose our intelligence. Whether we're men or women. Is that all right?
I just wish I'd make another comment. You know, said that if we think we are women, but I think the men, the problem, they have thought of us too much as women, as men have the spirit, soul, and devotees. So,
yeah, that's
all right. Guys, to add to the comment.
Yeah, of course. I agree. Anything else? Thank you very much. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Lord Premendent.